Now, running a marathon is hard enough, but imagine doing it with a stoma.
Well, today's guest has done exactly that. Today on TRC Meets, we are chatting to DJ, media personality, and now author Adele Roberts, who's actually a mate of yours.
Oh gosh, she's got some stories, Sarah. Trouble, trouble. This is TRC Meets, when we meet incredible runners with amazing stories. Adele, welcome.
Thank you.
Hello.
I can't believe I'm here. I watch you all the time.
No, you don't.
I do.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. You know I'm your fan, Rick. Come on.
This is incredible. When till we get onto the spinning on the back stuff? So me and Adele know each other a while back, actually. We go back about 7 years, seven or 8 years.
She's already told one story about you at a party. So I'm very excited of what other things you can spin about, Rick.
Well, oh, gosh. All right. Okay. That will come. But we've got to go in at the deep end here. A couple of years ago, you woke up in a hospital bed having had a cancerous tumour removed and you had a stoma in your tummy.
Yeah.
What are you thinking?
Oh my goodness. So when I woke up, relief that I was alive still, because I know there's no guarantees in life and especially with surgery. I remember coming round, just touching my body thinking, oh my gosh, you made it, amazing. And I thought, I'm going to have to call my girlfriend Kate in a bit and let her know the good news that I'm still alive.
And then it was during like lockdowns and coronavirus, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So that's another fear, like going into something like that, not being able to have everyone around you like you normally would.
Yeah, totally. Because I think I forget that aspect all the time, that I was totally alone. Nobody was allowed to come and visit because of COVID.
Mm.
And everybody in the hospital had half a face because everybody had to wear a mask.
Yeah.
So I never really saw another face the whole time I was in there.
And that makes it more scary, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. It makes it more surreal and more strange. I saw my own face, that was it. And I've seen enough of that. So didn't want more of that. So I remember coming round and thinking, being really grateful to be alive. And then I thought, oh, I wonder if I've got one of those stoma things, because I wasn't sure at the time if I would get one. So the doctor said, we might have to give you a stoma to help your body recover from the surgery. When they went to get the tumour, it was so big and they cut away so much of my colon that they had to give me a stoma so that my body could heal from the surgery. So I remember pulling back the covers and looking down and seeing this see-through bag with a little bit of my intestine poking out. And I thought, yep, got one of those. And I just remember thinking, okay, I'll try and get up tomorrow and see what it looks like, because I couldn't really see it properly because I was lying down. And my whole body was really sore as well. You know, it's very, it was keyhole surgery, but it goes very deep within the body.
Mm.
And I just remember thinking, yeah, overwhelming gratitude and let's learn to use this stoma.
Yeah. Is everything just running before you at that point? You're just thinking about your health. You're not necessarily thinking about, oh my gosh, I've now got this stoma attached to me. And what's that going to mean for me when it comes to working out, running, getting fit again? So are you at that stage at this point? Is it all, are you thinking about everything?
Oh yeah, no, totally, Rick. I didn't think I could run. I wasn't thinking about running. I didn't know if I'd ever be fit enough to run. I didn't know if you could run with a stoma. I remember thinking it was quite convenient actually, because they'd given me a catheter so I didn't need to go for a wee. I had this stoma bag so I didn't need to go for a number two. And they had loads of things keeping me alive. And I was like, oh, could get used to this. Like tubes all over me. But I thought, they're going to bring me my food in a bit. Excellent. You know, this is the life. But yeah, I just remember being just very grateful to be alive.
Yeah. It's been a heck of a journey though, hasn't it? Like to get to this point.
Yeah.
And, you know, that journey's had some enormous downs, but it's also had some major ups. I mean, Sarah, we're blown away to hear about your Guinness World Record.
Thank you. Because I don't know if that's actually impressive to people that run, you see.
So I'm currently training for the London Marathon. And this week has been a massive down for me. I don't even have, I just run. And that's all I have to think about. And you ran that Guinness World Record in the time that I would give everything for.
Oh, wow.
And it's so impressive. The fact that not only, you know, I hear people say like, oh yeah, she got the Guinness World Record. And I'm like, yeah, but look at the time as well. Like that is no mean feat. And especially considering as well, the night before that you had before the marathon, we're going to go all over the place with this, but I want to touch on that. So I love the fact that you have an affectionate name. Can you tell us a little bit about Audrey and how she was a bit naughty the night before London Marathon?
Absolutely, Sarah. Yeah, so Audrey, When I feel things deeply, Audrey moves. So gut reaction is definitely real. I know that now. I can see my emotions in motion. So, you know, when you get butterflies, I can see butterflies now. If I like a song, Audrey moves. And I know Rick's looking at me now like, what are you talking about? But you can actually see your intestines and how they react to things.
Wow.
Wow.
And so when your intestine reacts to a good song?
Yeah, and it moves on its own. So if I didn't have my bag on now and you could see Audrey, she might be moving around. And I can't tell, I can't control it. So it's like your heart, you know, your heart just beats on its own.
Yeah.
Your intestines move on their own. So sometimes it's because of digestion, but sometimes it's because of feelings. And so when I get very nervous or very excited, so I'm a little bit nervous now, so it's probably moving, Audrey starts being naughty, as Sarah put it. And the night before the marathon, I was understandably really, really nervous. And I was trying to get enough fuel into my body because I knew I'd have to be able to get around 26.2 miles. And I'd had porridge oats and mashed potato because I'd decided that that was something that would give me lots of carbs, but also something easy to digest.
And this is April 23.
Yeah. So this is the night before the marathon. So I ate that for my tea. And then I got like what you call like the tingle. When I get a tingle, I know that Audrey's about to be naughty and about to take my stoma bag off. And she was moving around so much that my bag started to come off and all of the porridge oats and mashed potatoes started spewing all over the hotel room.
Oh, wow.
So I like darted into the bathroom, managed to catch it, but because it's quite sticky, it got stuck in the shower. And then I'm trying to shower it off myself. It makes a dam in the plug hole and then floods the whole bathroom.
Oh my god!
And this is like middle of the night, isn't it?
Yeah, this is 3 a.m, the night before the marathon.
Just what you want.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What are you able to see the funny side to the situation at that point? Or are you going like, this is not a good sign for what I need to do?
No, I was like filled with dread. I was like, Audrey, please no, don't do this to me the night before the marathon. And I tried to get back to sleep, but I was terrified of my bag coming off again. So I just lay there till 6 a.m. and then it was time to go to the marathon. And I just hoped that I had enough fuel in my body to be able to get around. But yeah, I wasn't feeling confident at that point, I'll be honest.
But it was still, can we now kind of break down that marathon run? Because everyone knows there's like a saying that 30 kilometers into a marathon is halfway. And like, I guess, how did you attack it? Like, did you feel good the whole way round? Did you have the classic hit the wall?
Yes, great question. So I think, first of all, I was so overwhelmed by the prospect of doing the marathon that I panicked right from the start. So I remember Kate taking me to the start line. And because when I signed up for the marathon, I thought my predicted time would be about 5 hours 40. So I didn't think I would be as fast as I ended up being.
Wow.
So I had to wait, I think, half an hour at least before I could join the start line. So by the time I got there, there were people streaming right across the start and it was very busy.
Mm. And was your predicted time based on like previous runs? Is that what you put in?
No, it was based on when I decided to do it, I went for a little run to see how fast I was and that's how fast I was. I would have finished in 5 hours 40.
Oh, right, got it. So you're just like, right, this is a comfortable pace. I'm going to try and build up this pace. Yeah. And that's what I can do. Right.
Because I didn't know at that time if I could do a marathon with a stoma and I didn't want to put pressure on myself. So yeah, when I signed up, it was about 5 hours 40. And then it was shortly after that, when I looked into training, that I started to realize there was no Guinness World Record for anybody with a stoma.
And you thought, cha-ching.
Yeah. I thought, well, that's mine.
Yeah. Well, I thought, well, I won't be doing this again, so why not register? Because it's just a lovely marker in the sand for people with a stoma to go, do you know what? It could be possible. And then they wrote back to me and went, you got to get 4 hours. So I was like, great. Yeah. That's not going to happen.
That's a bit mean. Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah. But I thought, well, I'll give it a go. Yeah. So as I started the training, I started getting fitter and started getting faster. But yeah, when I started the actual marathon, it was very busy on the course and old me would have panicked. I would have been like, I'm not going to get the time that I need. But I just try and now treat mile one as the start line. So I ease in over that first mile. Mm. And like you say, the 30K thing, I decided that I wouldn't treat Tower Bridges halfway. I would wait until I came to the second part of Rainbow Row.
Oh, that's very clever.
As the halfway point. Yeah. So
that's,
I was like very
mentality.
Steady in my pace until about mile, is it 20? 21, mile 21.
Yeah.
And I knew I only had like a 10K then. And I thought, well, I know from training.
Yeah, you can do that.
And I know from training I'm all right across a 10K. And then that's when I put like the speed in and I thought, right, just bolt to the end now. So yeah, I waited right until mile 21 before I actually went
for it. To go for it. But you know, it started off during your chemotherapy that you were doing 5K a day and some of that was just walking.
Yeah.
So you came a long way in a short period of time.
Yeah, thank you, Rick. Yeah, I was so ill during chemotherapy, especially towards the end, that I could only walk some days. But I just, part of me trying to deal with cancer and deal with chemotherapy and get myself back on track was doing what I could when I could.
Yeah.
And not worrying too much about how fast it was. I just thought, as long as you keep moving forward, you'll move forward in your life. And so I made a promise to myself to just at least do 20 minutes of walking every single day. And like you say, that challenge, make sure you do 5K, no matter how you complete it, just try and do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And how did those 5Ks or 20 minute walks, how did they make you feel when I'm guessing you're going through one of the hardest times of your life?
In some senses, incredible. When I put music on and I move my body, I lip sync for my life in my head. I'm like one of the drag queens off RuPaul's Drag Race. And I just imagine myself like having the time of my life. But there were days when my hands and my feet were very, very sore. So sometimes those walks would literally be a shuffle and I'd be bent over. And people would look at me funny, almost like, well, why is that girl, who they perceive to be like young and fit, bent over and very slow? But it was because my hands and my feet were suffering so much. But I just made sure, don't give up, just keep going no matter how slow it is.
You had massive shoes on, didn't you?
Yeah, like these Hoka trainers. Is that how you say it? Is it Hoka rather than Hoka?
Well, it depends if you ask for it.
Please tell me.
They used to be called Hoka 1-1s, but right. I used to thought...
Or because, Hoka One One.
Yeah, I used to thought it was Hoka One One.
Ah! And they've like shortened
it. They shortened it and they are just Hokas.
They are okay. Good though. Yeah. Super comfy as well. Yeah.
And it's the Bondi X. So what was really strange was I did a running event. When I first got diagnosed, there was a week where I didn't know how serious the cancer was. And I kind of had to carry on as normal and just sort of like worry about the results when I got them. Mm. And I had a running event to do and it was a Hoka event.
Oh, really?
And I got given a pair of Bondi X shoes. And in the end, that was all I could wear on my feet. So it was almost like fate that I did that event and got those trainers and they got me through the whole of my chemotherapy.
So this is 2021 when you
were
diagnosed.
Yeah, 2021. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what was your, up until that point, what had your running looked like? Like, what was your reason for starting running and what did you love about it?
I wasn't a runner, I'll be honest with you. For a long time when I started running, I found it really hard and I really didn't like it. My first ever marathon was for the charity Heads Together, which is a mental health charity. And the reason I wanted to do it is because my cousin sadly took his own life. He was only 19 and that was my reason to run. And I knew, again, that I would give it everything that I'd got. And I think that helped push me over the unfitness, because I know that when a lot of people start running, it's very hard for a long time, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it stays hard, even when you think you've cracked it, and then goes back and you're like, oh no,
totally.
We're back.
Your running journey's been relatively short compared to, you know, most people. You started running in 2017. When I first met you and we used to work at Radio 1 together, you weren't a runner when you started out there.
You know, don't you? Like, how much have I transformed in the time you've known me?
Fitness-wise?
Yeah.
Incredibly.
I was much bigger, wasn't I, Rick?
Yeah. But you've always liked the hoodie.
Always. I'm black. Always wear black. Yeah, always wear a hoodie.
Yeah. But you just like your whole journey, and then that running's become so, you know, integral and important to you. And, you know, then you went on to achieve what you did in 2023. It was absolutely amazing. Where are you now with your running?
I adore running. And I think it's the way I stay stable. It's strange that I started running because of mental health. And I think it helps me with my mental health. I've been through some very dark times in my life and I didn't have a way to cope. Mm. And I'm so glad I found running. It used to be music, but now it's running and music. And when I fuse the two, I just feel amazing.
Sarah, and I love this quote. They say, if you ever need to restore your faith in humanity, go to a marathon. I love that from your book.
Yeah. Would you agree? Like, there's nothing like that atmosphere, is there?
No. And I went and watched the Brighton Marathon recently and I turned to someone who, he's only done one and I think we were at like mile 4.5 and I had tears in my eyes and I was like, isn't this great? And he was like, I don't get it. And then we went to the finish line 4 or 5 hours later and he had tears in his eyes and he was like, I get it now, I've remembered. Because you can't put into words what you will go through, like, kind of alone within however long you're running that marathon. Like, those 26.2 miles, it's you who gets you from mile one to the end. And I guess that's, like, symbolic to loads of other things in life where you can have so many people around you cheering you on, but it is you that's going to get you to that end point. I don't know if you found that in the marathon as well.
Well said. And I think what I love as well is anybody who turns up to cheer, all the volunteers, everybody's doing something for someone else. Mm. And I think a lot of the time runners are running for a cause close to their heart or family members that they've lost. Like, I'm getting goosebumps now thinking about it. And what I love when you're in a race is seeing people's t-shirts and who they're running for and why they're running. And
that you gives can't, you a if boost. You get through a marathon and you read those and you're not in tears.
No, I know. Like, and yours has Adele plus Audrey.
Yeah. On it.
And Audrey got her own medal as well for the marathon. That is, I mean, Kate's in the room with us now. So well made. So cute.
You know, Audrey got more shout outs than me.
Did she?
Yeah. When I was running around, people kept going, "Go on, Audrey." And I'm like, "I'm the one with the running."
No, and you're gearing up for London again?
Oh, no, I'm going to London to cheer this
year. To cheer. Yeah. So are you so excited to now be on the other side?
Have a little sit down. Yeah.
Where are you going to be cheering?
So I hope that I'm going to be part of the BBC commentary team.
Oh, really?
And what we're going to do is, I don't know if I can say this, but I'm going to say it anyway, because I love you, Rick, and I know you. I trust you. We're going to be getting shout outs from people that are watching at home that maybe can't make it to the marathon and cheer on the people that are actually running in it. So obviously the elites go off, and then when everybody else joins into the race, I'll be there to do shout outs and say well done to people.
Oh, that's going to be so good. Awesome. That'll bring like all of the emotions back. Because once you'd cross the line and you know you've done it, how are you feeling at that moment?
Like you say, there was lots of stages to it, and crossing the line was so special. Whitney Houston's One Moment in Time was playing in my headphones when I crossed the line, and that felt like a movie. And then I knew Kate was somewhere on the other side of the finish line. So
it's
I was
a bit
just
of a
like,
walk.
Yeah, yeah, totally. But I was just like, oh my gosh, we did it. I need to tell Kate that we've done it. But then somebody mentioned about the record to me, because I'd kind of like forgotten. I just did it in stages. I was like, get to the start line, get to the finish line, and then see if you can do the record. And all those things happened. It was such a special day.
And you quite comfortably had done the record.
Yeah,
so I'm surprised
I couldn't
believe you forgot.
It. Yeah, well, it was more like I was just taking it mile by mile. And I think that, you know, in the book I explain, I always break things down into steps. And I think I try not to get too overwhelmed. So I try to just give myself mini goals. Mm. And then I think that's how I actually achieve more than I thought was possible. Mm. And I wasn't sure about the time because my watch had started funny. And then I was so far behind the main clock, I didn't know what time I'd got. So it looked like I was slower than 4 hours. I had no idea.
So that must have been even more special when you realized that you had done it. How did that feel?
I couldn't believe it, because Gabby said 3 hours 30 minutes and 22 seconds, and I was like, I tried, you know, you're like, don't swear, you're
it's
on TV.
Such a nuts time. I can't even tell you how much of a nuts time. You have to stop much on the way around?
Yeah, there was one stop, and I kind of took too long on that stop, because I thought if I hadn't have stopped, I could have got under 3:30.
Yeah.
But I still take the time. But I stopped to go to a port-a-loo, and when I got in the port-a-loo, somebody had peed on the seat, so I had to clean it. So it took a good 2 minutes to do that wee break. Yeah. I'm like, oh, if I'd have held it in, I might have been able to get under 3:30, but I'll take the time.
Incredible.
You're really keen to talk to people about the signs of bowel cancer and what to look out for.
Yeah.
And you know, in your book, you're pretty raw when it comes to, you know, check that, because it's well worth it. It will save your life.
Absolutely. Sadly, bowel cancer is the second biggest cancer killer in our country. So first is lung cancer, bowel cancer second. And it's because the symptoms can be explained away. People don't realize a lot of the time. And also because by the time it gets found, it's usually too late. So I've just been very lucky that first of all, I saw the signs. And second of all, that it got caught in time. And you'll see in the book as well that I'm actually on a TV show. I'm a celebrity experiencing the symptoms for everyone to see.
In real time.
Yeah. With like the whole production, a doctor on set.
Yeah.
And they even missed it.
You're giving your food away on I'm a Celebrity. Nobody gives their food away on I'm a Celebrity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So can you, for anyone who might be listening who's worried, obviously check with your doctor, but can you just give us some of those symptoms that you didn't realise were symptoms at the time?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Sarah. So first of all, losing weight. And I thought because I'd started to get fit, that's why I was losing weight. My tummy would be a bit bloated when I ate, so bloated tummy. But I thought that that was because, well, Kate told me, my girlfriend told me it's because I'm bad at cooking.
Are you bad at cooking?
So I thought I'd not been cooking my food properly because I am dead lazy. So I was like, yeah, that'll be that. And then fatigue. So on I'm a Celeb, I used to go to sleep when the sun went down, which was really annoying because they don't deliver you food until it goes dark because it looks better on camera. So we'd have to wait till nighttime to get our food, but I'd be knackered and my body would start to shut down.
Oh, wow.
So that was 2019. So that was 2 years before you got diagnosed.
Yeah. And when I asked the doctor when they found the tumour, they said it was grown over 10 years. So I was getting like quite ill in 2019. And then what started to happen after I left the jungle was I started to notice mucus at first when I'd go to the toilet. And then it was like little spots of blood. But the little spots of blood would be every time I'd do a poo, basically.
Yeah.
And then I didn't call straight away, which is naughty. So please speak to someone, like Sarah said, if you're worried. But it got so regular that I was like, this isn't normal for me. And then that's when I rang my GP.
That's incredible, 10 years. Because I guess that I've never heard people speak about that before, I guess. Of like, have you since thought back over those 10 years and gone, oh gosh, that was maybe it. And that I didn't spot as well.
Yeah, totally. And I look at myself in, I think it's 2011. And I think, my God, she didn't know. You know, that girl was just like going around with her life and not appreciating her life.
What year did you join Radio 1?
2011. That was the first year I did a show. Yeah. Wow.
This is so weird, but I remember your first ever link on Radio 1.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, gosh. Please don't critique it.
Obviously, me and you grew up dreaming one day that we'd be on Radio 1. We had like similar dreams, though we ended up in slightly different positions. But I remember you were like, say, I'm Adele. And you're like, you're explaining where you're from. And yes, I was that girl who did go on Big Brother all those years ago. That was your opening link, wasn't it?
Oh my gosh. No. I think I've deleted it, all coming it back from to my you? Brain. Yeah.
I don't know why, because I was such a Radio 1 fanatic, even though I worked there and I just started working there. I always listened to the DJ's first show. And I remember your first link, which is mad. Now.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
All right, next question.
No, short term now. You can remind me about the different parties and me doing bad things on my back.
Oh yeah, so what's the best thing Rick's ever done in your presence?
Well, there's been a lot, but the first thing I remember is got stories for days, Rick.
Excellent.
The microphone one's
welcome
coming.
To a 2-hour podcast.
But I remember the when I first joined, it was one of the last ever parties, wasn't it, in the old building where Radio 1 used to be.
Yeah. Yeah, televisions out the windows kind of stuff.
Yeah, totally. But Rick wasn't throwing the televisions. But it was like a warehouse rave. And Rick was leading the dance floor. And he can break dance, let me tell you. He can spin on his back. He can do flares. He's amazing.
Sarah's going, I
he
don't
can do
know
what,
this
flares?
Point.
Yeah.
What's
so
that?
Can, you know, it's like sort of like where you kick your legs up, isn't
twist,
it?
Twist,
like,
yeah, twist in the middle. Yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah, honestly, he's amazing. And I was like, my God, Newsbeat are lit. I was like, I should be working for Newsbeat.
I thought she was going to talk about the time that I basically ruined her show one day when I came in to do Newsbeat, which is like a 15-minute just annoyance in the middle of her show. And then I started reading, beginning the programme. I was like, I can't hear myself here. I was like, I haven't pulled the microphone down.
And I'm thinking, I'm
just talking to her. She's just fiddling around in the decks trying to fit it. I'm just like, oh yeah, microphone, everyone. Sorry, we'll start again.
Oh, God, chaos. Chaos. Well, hopefully Rick's press record today.
Yeah, I have press record.
And it's,
yeah.
Oh, please.
So you're running now, post-marathon. Mm. What do you use running for? And are you still getting out for runs?
Yeah, well, I've been dancing on ice recently. So I've been doing a little bit of that. So
incredible.
I've not got properly back to my running yet. But running for mental health, without a doubt, it's the way I de-stress. And I didn't know that about running. I didn't realise it was important for someone like me to do. So now I feel like I'm the family dog. Kate puts me out in the morning, lets me go for a run, then gets me back in later on in the day.
You're good though at not letting stress get to you, because you know you don't do WhatsApp.
No,
you definitely don't do DMs because you haven't replied to any of mine for years.
Sorry, Rick.
But do you find that you're quite like, is that a conscious choice that you have kind of a limit that you let in and that's how you kind of deal with stress?
yeah, I've learned to get better with stress because I did used to suffer a lot. And I think that now, I think I say in the book, your phone's there for your convenience. So don't worry too much about feeding everybody else. Look after your own mental health. And it's just more that I'm quite shy. I'm quite an introvert and I just get overwhelmed. And so I feel bad if I've not replied to people. So it's almost like sometimes I just don't even go to look if people have got in touch because I'll worry and I don't want to worry.
The same, yeah.
Yeah.
Like that, I do think that's the thing that a lot of people don't realise is that all of the, you know, the thing sometimes people post saying like, if you've got your mail app and it has like 13,000 unread emails and there's two types of people in the world, people who go, oh yeah, same. Or people who are like, what's going on? There's so many to get back to. I'm the same. I have to like,
that.
I need to get better at just leaving my phone to one side. Yeah, I'm terrible. Yeah. I'm literally terrible.
Stoma stigma, you're really keen to eliminate this, aren't you? And just tell people, it's there and look, I can run a marathon with it.
Love that, Rick. Yeah. I didn't realise there was so much shame surrounding stomas because...
I think there is. Yeah,
there is, and I didn't realise. I remember some of the people that would talk to me when I might get one were almost like, oh, sorry, you're going to have a stoma. But I was like, well, it's going to save my life. Like, why would it be a bad thing? And also, when I did get it, nobody was like, this is how you get yourself to running again, or this is what's possible movement-wise. And so I just made it my little mission, really, just to show people that you can get your life back, you can start running again. And there's nothing to be ashamed of. It's just a different way of going to the toilet. Yeah.
One of the things I loved as well that you talked about in the book is the fact that actually some people might see it as this is everything that's getting taken away from me. But you saw it as like a newfound appreciation for your body. And actually post having it, you feel so much better about your own body.
Absolutely. And Rick will know, I used to be a very different person. I used to hide away all the time. I was very much not looking after myself. Used to eat junk food, was very overweight, and as in unhealthy. So it's not necessarily that I had a bigger body, it's just it was an unhealthy body spiritually and physically. And I'm just so glad that I found running, because I think mentally and physically now I'm in a much better place. And the only thing that's different between me now and me then is mindset, really, and movement. And like you say, that the stoma helped me appreciate my body. This body kept me alive. I shouldn't be ashamed of it. I should be grateful to it. And I've got a body that can work and move. Some people are bedbound. Like my mum in her final days couldn't get out of bed. She would have swapped with me in a moment. And I just felt like a bit of a brat that I'd been so down on myself when really I'm very lucky.
And what would you, if you could go back to 2011 you and tell her, this is what's to come, this is what's going to happen, what would you say?
Oh, I'd be so happy for her, because I was very... In a different place, in a dark place, and I was down on myself, and I didn't have any self-care really. And I'd tell her that she's going to be the one that's going to change our life, and I'd be proud of her.
Oh, you're making me emotional, mate.
Oh, thank you.
What about now? How is Adele now? How do you feel health-wise?
I feel like I'm getting back to the old me. Doing Dancing on Ice showed me that there's still a way to go physically. My bones were very vulnerable on Dancing on Ice. I fractured my wrist.
How's your iron content?
My what, sorry?
Your iron content.
Oh, yeah, good question. Yeah, much better. So I'm still getting treated for anemia, but it means that I can manage it now. Hopefully in the future, I'll be able to have my stoma reversed. It's not possible at the moment because my colon is too twisted. But if they can get that working again, hopefully I can have my stoma reversed. And I think just going forward, I'd like to maybe do a children's book about stomas, just so that can hopefully help some of the younger people who have them. Because I think if we know at primary school level that that's okay, we won't have this problem. People won't be feeling ashamed and won't be hiding themselves away.
And people will hopefully be checking their poo as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
You've come such a long way. You should be so proud.
Thanks, Rick. Thank you very much.
100%, you have. Well, I'm taking on London Marathon in a couple of weeks and feeling very, very nervous about it at this point. But hearing your story and how you break it down, that is what I'm going to try and do.
Oh, I love that, Sarah. Thank you. And I'll be there at the finish line. I'll
come find you'll see me broken at the end.
You don't know your number yet, do you? But I'm going to track you, if that's all right.
Thank you. Yeah, I've got...
And how many people are you going to track? But,
just Sarah.
The whole marathon.
Yeah, just shouting her out. Like, you're just going to have shout-outs for days on the TV.
Oh, great. Yeah, my mum will love that.
Adele, it's been amazing.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on. Will you have me back? I've got more stories, more Rick stories.
Oh, God. Oh, right. No.
Yeah, we'll do another one without Rick.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can have Andy next time. We'll have the Olympian in instead of the guy who wrecked your studio.